First case for argument is Veterans Legal Defense Fund versus Schwartz. Mr. Krisloff.
Thank you, Judge Spong. Good morning. Morning, Judge Ripple. Morning, Judge Williams. This case presents the issue of whether a veteran's statutory right in Illinois to a preference in state hiring is an enforceable property right protection which the federal court has jurisdiction over, regardless of the 11th Amendment. The district court below ultimately ruled that the 11th Amendment prohibited the district court from exercising jurisdiction, but on appeal, the state appears to have abandoned that. At page 11 of their brief, they acknowledge that a claim of this sort is not barred by Pennhurst. Given that, the issue is whether there, I guess one of the things would be to just say, please remand, and since he wasn't barred by the 11th Amendment, the district court should just proceed. The state then gets into it and says, no, the court should get into the merits of it, and says basically that there should be no property right in a probationary job. But indeed, even the state courts of Illinois, which would determine whether there is a property right, have determined that there can be.
What would a remand do at this stage, Mr. Krisloff? I mean, what more would could the district court do in development of a record that would aid us? You suggested a remand a few moments ago.
Well, I guess their position is that the property
right... No, I don't want their position. I want your position.
Well, our position is that we probably should just be entitled to summary judgment.
Well, I understand when you get to that. But I mean, what on the issue, you raise the specter of remand. What could happen on remand in development, as I say, of a record that would aid us, that we don't
have... I think the only thing at this point is that the district court would then determine whether there is indeed a property right in the preference, which I believe is clear on the law that there is a matter of law.
So it's only a matter of law. That's my question. Is there any factual development that could aid us? I just want to get remand either on or off the table. So is there anything that you see in virtue of by remand?
Arguably framing the relief would be the only thing. Other than that, I think we, on remand, the court would have to enter summary judgment in favor of the plaintiff and proceed.
So we just would get the district court's read on the law, that's all.
Right. No. Right.
Well, assuming you've shown that you have a property interest in those positions, why doesn't your ability to file an administrative claim or a mandamus action in the Illinois courts provide an adequate remedy?
Well, because we're not required to exhaust, we should not be required to exhaust remedies in a 1983 action. We believe that this court's expansion into a must exhaust state remedies is an expansion which is contrary to the law.
Well, what about a mandamus action? That doesn't require exhaustion, does it?
Well, that would still be, the question is whether our 1983 action is barred by state remedy, by whether we have to exhaust state remedies. So I guess my answer is that under 1983 we would not have to launch a state action at all. In this case, indeed, what we're asserting is that the property right is actually in the preference itself, and that has been recognized by the Illinois court, by Denton.
The Illinois courts, of course, can recognize a property right if they like, but does that necessarily mean there's a cognizable property right for purposes of the 14th Amendment analysis?
Once a state has granted a property right in a specific item, that is what 1983 does protect. Indeed, most property rights are created by state law in our society, and so the question is not whether the federal court should take cognizance and re-review every
well,
particular
in what,
property
in what
right.
context? In what did the Illinois court say there was a property right in this preference?
Denton establishes this right, and I believe Denton is Denton explicitly calls it I believe Denton specifically calls it a property right. I guess rather than spend our time with that, I will find it by the time of my rebuttal. given that, it seems sort of odd, indeed, the times change. Perhaps when we filed this case, perhaps there was some question in our society about the wisdom of a preference. But the fact is now, there's very little question that a preference for those who've given military service is certainly legitimate, respected, and probably is universally recognized as a legitimate exercise of the state's designation of...
If the state were to give the children of veterans a preference at the University of Illinois for admissions purposes, gave them a certain amount of credit or some preference similar to this, would that be constitutionally protected?
Yes, it would be. That
child would be admitted under any circumstance.
Well, I don't
know. I mean, assuming they were in that category, they would go to the top of the list.
Perhaps. I mean, I don't see that as being a problem because, I mean, I understand that we're...
a problem, just raising this question.
No, I mean, the question is, do we look behind the state's actions to determine the legitimacy of that? Now, a child is probably more direct. If you wanted to say a cousin, that might be an arbitrary distinction because... an arbitrary grant just because the cousin is not likely to have suffered the same kind of experience that a child would. So for a child to get a preference in getting into the University of Illinois, I suppose if there are state legislatures in the back of the courtroom, that might be next on the agenda. If the court has no further questions, I would reserve the rest of my time for my rebuttal.
Well, I want to know what remedies, so you're saying there are no remedies available in Illinois because this is a 1983 action?
Not that there are necessarily no remedies available in Illinois, it's just for a 1983 action we're not required to exhaust state remedies, that we can bring a 1983 action, and phrased that comports with the 11th Amendment. We can pursue that in federal court, and we're entitled to, and we would ask that we be allowed to. Thank you, Jeremy.
Thank you, Mr. Griswold. Ms. Welch?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. I'm here on behalf of the Secretary of State and the Director of CMS. Judge Flom asked the first question about the remand. As the court indicated, there's only a question of law here, and certainly it's well established that the court can affirm on any ground in the record. And the ground that we're urging is the merits, which is really the simplest, avoiding the thorny ex parte Young issue and so on, that there are two fatal flaws in the plaintiff's argument here. The first is that this property right, so-called property right, while it is an absolute preference to for a job in or for an offer, if you are the highest veteran in the highest class available, that kind of right is far too contingent to be considered an entitlement for constitutional purposes. And this addresses Judge Ripple's question. Just because the state says you're entitled to something, does that mean that that something is a property right? Well, sometimes yes and sometimes no. And it's the answer is no when the right is a contingent one, is just too uncertain. For example, and the best proof of the uncertainty, I think, of the plaintiff's right to the preference is that in the very last document they filed, they were, document 124, page 5, they said, we cannot prove at this time that we are entitled to a preference for any of the jobs that we applied for. Now, if they can't prove that, and we know that from Mr. Terry's affidavit that non-veterans were hired for jobs that he applied for, it must mean that he was not entitled to it for some reason, that there was some contingency that made it impossible for him to prove that he was entitled to those jobs to which non-veterans were appointed.
Well, is that a factual matter that ought to be explored at the trial level?
No, Your Honor, I think that if the plaintiff says, I can't prove my case, that case is over. I mean, this is an essential element of his case. He has to show that that he was deprived of an entitlement that he would have been given. And if he's saying, I can't prove that, then his case is over. I mean, if at summary judgment you can't come up with proof of every essential element of your case that, if believed, would entitle you to judgment, you're out of the box. I mean, you cannot go forward, and summary judgment is appropriate.
Well, can we take your position with respect to whether this is a property right or not without placing ourselves in really in conflict with the Court of Appeals for the Third Circuit?
Oh, the Carter case? Yeah. Well, in Carter, yes, I think it's not a conflict. Because in Carter, there was no argument. Apparently, there was no the preference there was for promotion, and all, which is a little different from hiring, as the court mentioned. And the court distinguished, remember, three cases from this circuit: the City of Chicago case, Petru, and Webster. So the problem is that in Carter, there was no discussion about whether this preference actually got you the job. Whereas here, again, plaintiff has been unable to show that the preference would have, any of these plaintiffs, have been unable to show that the preference would have gotten them the job offer.
On the other hand, is it fair to characterize any of our cases as really dealing with absolute preferences such as this one?
Your Honor, I think, you mean in Petru, City of Chicago, and so on, in Webster?
Mm-hmm.
Again, it is an absolute preference, but it's an absolute preference contingent upon one, a plaintiff, a veteran, being in the top class of and being the top veteran. So that, for example, if Mr. Terry were in an A class, A category, on the eligible list, and there were 10 other veterans also on the A list, he wouldn't necessarily be entitled to the preference. Only the best veteran would be. And that's not the kind of thing that came up in Carter. That kind of distinction didn't come up in Carter.
So ours is more attenuated, is that?
Yes, that's exactly. It's uncertain. And because it's uncertain, it's not an entitlement for due process purpose. There's no mutual understanding. There's none of the certainty that a constitutionally protected property interest requires. Now, even if there wasn't, you could say that there was some certainty. The problem is that the preference just would lead you to a job that was not itself protected. And how anomalous is it that denial of a preference would require notice and a hearing for plaintiffs, but denial of the or being terminated while he was on probation would not? I mean, it just doesn't make sense. This is the Radijak, this is the idea in Radijak, that just because you, or in Yassin, if you have an entitlement to a step that takes you to something that doesn't have any protectable property interest, then it just doesn't make sense that initial step, that the offer, if you will, would have more constitutional protection than the actual job itself. So, but even this aside, let's say for the moment, just for argument's sake, that the preference is not so contingent, is not problematic because of the no property interest in the job itself. The problem then is that there are adequate state remedies. I mean, in Denton shows this. Denton itself was Mr. Terry. Mr. Denton applied for a job. He didn't get it. He was a veteran. He filed an administrative action. He had his administrative proceedings. He filed under the administrative review law in Illinois, and he got his decision. I mean, what could be more adequate than winning on administrative review? And for the, if administrative review were not available for, and it depends on the statutory scheme for each of the offices, then a mandamus, as the court indicated, mandamus is available to anybody who doesn't have the right to go up through administrative review. So, and for both cases, for both substantive and procedural due process, adequacy of a state law remedy, or rather inadequacy of an available, and inadequacy and unavailability of a state law remedy is an element of the case. Now, the plaintiff talks about this as exhaustion, but it's not about exhaustion. It's about the elements of your case. The case, one of the cases he cites, for example, about the whole exhaustion business is that unpublished decision in Harker. Now, in Harker, it's interesting to point out it was the plaintiff, not the defendant, that was saying he had to exhaust his administrative remedies. And the court rejected that notion. It's true, you don't have to exhaust your administrative remedies, but that's a different matter from whether there are state law remedies like mandamus, which is not administrative, as the court noted, available to you. These are, you cannot say on a procedural due process claim, for example, that you were denied due process when the process is right out there for you to take advantage of. This is the whole notion of how much process is due, how much process is available to you, how much is there for available for to correct these erroneous deprivations. And here, Mr. Denton, obviously proved in the Denton case in the Illinois Supreme Court that the state law remedies will get you what you want. Now, again, to go back a little bit on substantive due process, again, there is some question, as we noted in our brief, about whether substantive due process attaches for property interests. There's certainly a question that whether it should be confined to purely fundamental liberty interests rather than property interests. This court has found on occasion that property interests are protected as well as fundamental liberty interests under the substantive due process, but you also, if you don't have a fundamental liberty interest, if all you're asking or you're claiming is a property interest, then you also have to show that there's another substantive constitutional violation, which plaintiff has never claimed here, that there was something other than the denial of the preference. You have to be able to show that your state law remedies are inadequate. The same thing with regard to procedural due process. And the procedural due process, only you don't need a pre-deprivation hearing necessarily. You have to go back to the Matthews test. What do you have? You have the private interest, the government interest, the risk of erroneous deprivation coupled with the value of additional procedures. And here, plaintiff hasn't really shown that there would be value, a lot of added value, to have a notice earlier than saying that you're denied a job or a hearing before that denial. And how impractical would that be? How impractical is it to ask the government every time it denies a veteran a job to give him or is going to deny a veteran a job, or anyone for that matter, that they would be entitled to a hearing, a judicial hearing apparently, before this happened? Now this just doesn't make sense. In the normal scheme of things, when you have an interest that is not a fundamental liberty interest, when you have adequate state law remedies, then even post-deprivation remedies that can do the job for you, then you have failed your substantive or procedural due process claim.
Well, let me ask you a question about the class certification. Why does their challenge of the application of the preference generally create a conflict within the class?
Well, again, the problem is for any given job that say one of the plaintiffs had applied for, and the relief he wants is to reapply for that job, then what if someone else in the class, what if many someone else's in the class also applied for that job and thought they were the more appropriate person? So then you would have these constant conflicts among the members of the class for every job, trying to prove that, no, I'm the one who is the best within the class. So this is the kind of thing, I mean, this is what Denton shows. I mean, Denton shows, I think, that the best way to solve this problem is on a case-by-case basis, where the veteran who's denied the veteran goes up and says, hey, I was in the A category, I didn't get the job, someone else did it. You have to show me that either it's a better, you know, that it's a better veteran. Because if you don't have a better veteran than me, I'm entitled to the job.
Yeah, but if it's between a veteran and a non-veteran, and they're challenging the policy, that is, that say, for example, the non-veterans seem to always get the positions. As a class, couldn't they be certified just as to whether or not the preference was exercised? Do we have to get into all those details in terms of what's going on with each member of the class that necessarily or apply to the position?
Well, I think you do, Your Honor, because I think that every member of the class has to show a disadvantage. And so it's not like a class discrimination case where every person who is denied a job, say, based on sex or race, is discriminated against whether or not they would have gotten the job because there's this class-based animus. And here you don't have that. What you have is individual, and this is the random and unauthorized idea again coming up. You have these individual decisions which on the one hand plaintiffs said, look, non-veterans were hired instead of me. But again, you have to look at that last filing, he said. And he said, well, in effect, yeah, I know I said non-veterans were hired instead of me, but I can't show that I was entitled to that position more than the people who were hired. So there's a problem there, I think, in his, there's a what looks like a failure of proof here. And so for that reason, I think that, so that's sort of a roundabout way of saying, I think that the class certification just doesn't work in this case because of the conflict. If there are no other questions, we would ask the court to affirm not on the 11th Amendment ground, but on the other ground that is in the record, which is on the merits that plaintiff has failed to provide enough evidence to show a substantive or procedural due process claim. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Wells. Ms. Griswold.
With all due respect, it's sort of like a trick. You got it. In order to focus on the job rather than the preference, we say you have to show not only that you were a veteran and there was a non-veteran, but you were the best veteran. It's one thing to say when Raytheon loses out on a government contract, they can go through an immense ordeal to fight for their position as the best contractor. It's another thing to suggest that every individual veteran who gets denied, which the state acknowledges, it continues to ignore this absolute preference, and it is a class discrimination case. It is a case where veterans are being denied their absolute preference, and so it would not be a problem to say the veterans get the preference. Now, they may fight among themselves as to who's the best. The state might decide among them who's the best. The only question is, among whom do we choose? And in this case, once the state has decided there's an absolute preference that is enforceable, that's what it has to do. People serve in the military in part.
Of course, the veteran does have to qualify within class, though, right?
Sure.
I mean, if you fall out of the category, even though you're a veteran, that doesn't keep you alive for prospective employment, does it?
Right. No, this is the state doesn't...
So there is some minimum.
Sure. Oh, you have to be on the same category. Indeed, this was a Category A person, and the state doesn't dispute that. As to your question, Judge Ripple, Carter does say that in order to establish a valid 1983 civil rights claim, Mr. Carter must demonstrate that the conduct complained of was committed by a person acting under state law and that the conduct deprived him of rights, privileges, and immunities secured by the Constitution. And they do go on to say that the preference is a property right. Denton doesn't explicitly say property right, but Denton establishes that the right is that the personnel code, because statutory is required in this case, if not explicitly a property right, provides the veteran an absolute hiring preference.
Why don't you speak to the element of insufficient process? Because counsel's position is, and her interpretation of the cases are, that you not only have to show a property interest, but you have to show inadequate or insufficient process.
Well, doing it one
case... And that that's an element.
Well, our position is that you don't have to do that, that that is just putting in exhaustion. But number two is the fact that this one-by-one basis doesn't seem to work. The state, even after Denton, the state continues to not follow the absolute preference. And so...
Now, we know that from a factual development as
yes,
well.
Yes.
What is that basically?
There is an affidavit in there. I forget the person. It is mentioned in our brief that the state, through at least, I think it's February, April of 2000, continued not to afford the absolute preference to veterans.
So why can't you mandamus? Follow mandamus?
Well, because for each particular person to do that on an individual basis may not work, and also the mandamus may not be effective for an individual. The individual may not be able to get attorney's fees. 1983 provides a great deal of protection and ability to make the rights effective that other statutes don't. And this is the one that you can't do a mandamus, I suppose, on a class basis. And in the state courts, the administrative code certainly wouldn't afford you the opportunity to do it as a class. And the Veterans Defense Fund is asserting this for all veterans to have their absolute preference.
Did that affidavit speak to numbers or just a policy that's perceived?
It spoke to occurrences. I don't know that it listed the occurrences, but it did set forth I can find.
But if you can recall, I mean, is it over what period of time, how many events occurred?
I don't know that it identified the specific number of events, but it identified that it had still occurred through at least February or April 2000. The other thing is that it just isn't effective to make them show that they were the most qualified veteran. I actually think I've covered all the questions on rebuttal that I had intended to. Is there anything else?
Apparently not.
Otherwise, I would ask that the court reverse, either remand or order the appropriate remedy from the state.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Wells. Thanks to all counsel.